Andy, I wanted to ask you about the work of the HTG in relation to the Welsh curriculum, because you mentioned there'd been a need to align up the work with the Welsh group.
Yeah, if I can just put that in a slightly wider context. You asked me earlier about the brief of the history task group, and I referred to the simplification of the history study units, rationalisation, if you like, of the attainment targets and reformulation of the statements of attainment. Other particular focuses were the overload, perceived overload at key stage 4, and the elaboration of short and full courses for history. Now, that of course was ultimately overtaken by the fact that a ministerial decision was taken that history would not be compulsory at key stage 4, and we tend to forget that actually there was a time when everybody believed that it would be compulsory at key stage 4, that the national curriculum for the foundation subjects would continue into key stage 4 with an attenuated sort of national curriculum course as an alternative to a full GCSE course. So we were very exercised about that, and I mean that's in a way something now that's sort of lost to memory because it never happened. Alignment with Wales was another issue that we had to focus on, and it wasn't that the national curriculum in England had to be identical with that in Wales, but there had to be alignment. I mean, the differences needed to be only the necessary differences between England and Wales. So we had an eye as a group on what was happening in Wales, and there was actually representation from Wales on the history task group, or an observer from Wales, so that we could stay in touch with what they were doing. I mean, the situation in Wales was rather different in that, one, the national curriculum in Wales was even more overcrowded than in England, with the inclusion of Welsh as a first or a second language. And then secondly, the national curriculum in Wales had these specifically Welsh components, which meant that the balance of the curriculum in Wales was rather different. I mean, because there was more Welsh, there was rather less, if I recall correctly, non-British, and the amount of non-British history was always an issue. I mean, it was something that perhaps people on the task group had different views about, but certainly some felt that there was rather too much British history. There was, however, political pressure to have lots of British history, especially at key stage 4, on the premise that history would be compulsory at key stage 4. So we spent an awful lot of time on issues like that in a, you know, on a longer view, actually, you know, fairly rapidly ceased to be issues. The other thing we had to spend time on was the possibility for linking history and geography, which is always a problematic project, you know, because they're such different subjects. I mean, the nature of geography as a subject is perhaps a little less clear than the nature of history as a subject. I mean, geography is a more sort of multifaceted area of learning, it seems to me, than history. But actually finding ways of linking the two together coherently in a joint course is very difficult, and it's something that we had to think about, again on the premise that there might need to be a joint compulsory history and geography course at key stage 4. So all of those things were areas of focus, but from the perspective of 25 years on, they don't seem so important as some of these more fundamental issues to do with the nature of history itself and the structuring of a history course.
Since then, there have been several revisions, 1994, 1999, recently the Key Stage 3 revision of 2008. Was it envisaged at the time that it would need revising so regularly?
No, I don't think so, but I suppose if you challenged the group at the time, there probably would have been a recognition that this would not be set in concrete, you know, that there would be an ongoing process of development. There was, as I said before, very much a sense that this was a development. You know, we were developing something, you know, really important and potentially valuable here. So I guess people probably would have acknowledged, particularly given the speed at which we had to do it, and particularly given, I think, probably our general perception that this wasn't a perfect result. You know, it was the best result in the circumstances and in the time available. In terms of developing statements of attainment, I think we were all acutely conscious that they were framed, you know, on the basis of projecting back from GCSE experience very largely, because there just wasn't an evidence base about the learning of history by younger children. There was no experience of, or no substantial experience of levels of response mark schemes for younger children. So there was very little to draw on to put together statements of attainment. And I think probably everybody would have accepted that those would have to be reviewed in the light of experience of using them. It was, to a degree, a sort of a shot in the dark.
Although actually, there hasn't been any systematic research based on post-national curriculum work on attainments targets, has there?
I don't know of it. I think what there has been, though, is an awful lot more work done on how young people learn history, and therefore a much more substantial evidence base, or, you know, research evidence base upon which you could now draw. Whether that's true for primary age children, I would doubt, actually. I think it's particularly, you know, the key stage 3 age group has been much more thoroughly researched now than it had been at the time we were seeking to frame these statements of attainment.
They were based simply on people's experience as teachers.
Yes. Yes, and well, yes, and in my case, experience, and that of others as well, experience of working with groups of teachers. I mean, I remember, for example, some work I did in Norfolk with teachers of what we now call Key Stage 1. You know, a couple of reception teachers who were enthusiasts for history, and we tried to map how children's understanding of history develops, you know, from age 5 to 6, what it looks like, how it manifests itself. And that work actually came in very handy when we were working on the National Curriculum Statements of Attainment. But one was aware at the time that it was a terribly slim and fragile basis on which to enact something that was going to be as important and influential as National Curriculum Statements of Attainment.
So for some part of it, the two groups, the primary and the secondary group, came together, did they?
There were meetings of the full group, and then between the meetings of the full group, there would be meetings of the subgroups to look at the particular issues. There was a group looking at Key Stage 4, one looking at Key Stage 3, there was a primary group. There were people who were looking at special educational needs. That work continued, you know, after the work of the history task group had come to an end.
Were you involved in any of that after the work of the HCG?
No, not much. I had a bit of involvement, I think, with non-statutory guidance, we kind of fed the work that we'd been doing in Staffordshire into the process of framing the non-statutory guidance. But a lot of that work continued after I'd left Staffordshire and been appointed as HMI. And once you've been appointed as HMI, as somebody once said, it's a bit like joining the army. You kind of lose your previous identity, and you're not encouraged to retain traces of it either, or you weren't. That's a little unfair, maybe, but HMI speaks with one voice, and the person who speaks about history for HMI was the staff inspector for history, who at the time was Roger Hennessy, previously been John Slater. And subsequently, that role of staff inspector for the subject has been progressively lost status within Ofsted. So now there are people called subject specialist advisors, who are HMI, but don't have the status of the former staff inspectors. But the role of being the lead person for history was taken on after Roger Hennessy by John Hamer, then after John Hamer by Scott Harrison, then by Paul Armitage, and most recently by Mike Madison. But it's that person who speaks on history for HMI, and there were meetings of a history HMI group where we would have debates, discussions, in effect, you know, people as HMI, people followed the party line, you know.
Just one question about Ofsted. Did the introduction of Ofsted, do you think, affect the way history was taught at all?
It may have encouraged a sort of compliance-led approach, alas, and unnecessarily, because although Ofsted has published reports on history in schools, the main focus of Ofsted's work has never really been to check that the national curriculum is being delivered precisely in accordance with the statutory requirements in every respect. The focus of Ofsted and of HMI before Ofsted has always been on quality and effectiveness. And ultimately the quality of the outcomes. How well do young people learn history is the fundamental question, rather than, is this particular study unit taught in a way that reflects all of the requirements of the statutory order? But that, you know, although it's easy to say that, and although, you know, there's never been any doubt that that has been the focus of HMI and Ofsted, that's not necessarily the way they're understood in schools. And it comes as a shock sometimes, actually, to realise how Ofsted is perceived within, or sometimes perceived within schools as this sort of... as a watchdog, you know, to check that things are being done in the right ways. Well, in some respects it does, you know. For example, provision for child protection is checked quite rightly by Ofsted, but that's never quite applied in that way to the curriculum. Nevertheless, I think perhaps there was the perception that Ofsted was looking to check that the national curriculum was being delivered correctly. Certainly that was often the perception when the literacy and numeracy strategies were introduced, and you know, I really would lose count of the number of times I've explained to people in both primary and secondary schools that you know, I'm not interested in checking that you are delivering the letter of the strategy. What I'm interested in is how much the children are learning and how effective the teaching is in promoting their learning. It's a perception thing, I think.
Thank you very much, Andy.